I've got to tell you, over the years, I have learned listening to Jordan Maxwell and Michael Tesarian. I've learned a lot, and there's more to learn when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Michael Tesarian, for you, what was the revelation? What was the beginning that got you into this?
Well, that happened back in about 1980 when I made a trip to California and had some mentor at the time, you see, had been talking about language, had been talking about etymology. I mean, you know, it's like full circle. Here we are again talking about the same thing. But this journey, you know, you're right on with the question, because right back then I got interested in something. You know, that's why my message also goes out to the young, to say start, you know, also getting interested in symbolism and the mysteries of language. I know I certainly was not interested in too many things, you know, but that got me interested. And this fellow, this mentor, American gentleman, actually a great artist who worked for Bill Graham, a very well-known man, he had a tremendous knowledge, George, about the meanings of words. He also knew a lot about English words, English country, you know, towns and villages and sort of like Manchester and Chichester, you know, I mean, he would just go on and on about the meaning of words like Belfast and Dublin. And this completely fascinated me, because I'd never, you know, we're not brought up in school really to look at words like that. I mean, okay, academics know about linguistics and stuff, but there's no magic in that. You know, that's a science and what have you. But there's a romance of names. There's a romance of language. There's a total other aesthetic, you know, a sort of like we're saying, esoteric approach to this. And I was only, of course, 14 and 15 at the time, so, you know, a lot of it was new to me. But what had happened was that this mentor had written down the name of Gerald Massey, the great Victorian, you know, scholar, Egyptologist, and poet and whatnot. And when we had to leave America, you know, and go back to Ireland, we were only on holiday there. Of course, I thought, you know, it's a simple matter of going and trying to find Gerald Massey's books, you know, and to my horror, you know, nobody had heard of the guy. You know, I couldn't find anything in those days by him, and the librarians just couldn't care less. You know, they just want to kick your ass down the steps, get out of here. You know, and I started to realize then, of course, it's a slow process, that it's not just a matter of this information being available. There's a suppression action at work. It's like what Jordan has been saying in the last segment. You know, it wasn't, I mean, you asked for anything else, any cheese ball rubbish, you see, and it's immediately provided for you, you know. But obviously, even a 15-year-old can work out that, wait a minute, if I'm going to the leading university libraries here, if I'm going to the leading bookstores, if I'm going to, you know, and of course, in an Ireland and British context, you even have some antiquarian libraries there.
Sure.
You know, that should have this work. And they don't. So you're sitting there thinking, well, wait a minute, you know, what's going on here? And then it was only, you know, later on that I actually got the works of Gerald Massey. And to do that, I had to come back to America because, you know, here they have these books slightly more available, even though they are suppressed and sequestered works. And that's what started it off. This was my introduction to astrotheology and to some of these larger issues, and also a deeper investigation into the meanings of words, which I emphasize again is connotative. It's not necessarily an academic one. So when people read our work, they sometimes get confused, because we're again looking at all of the subject matter in an esoteric way. That is a bit of a phase shift for a lot of people, you see, who are coming out of the schools, who are coming out of listening to so-called academic experts, who's you know, in my opinion, their understanding of the world that they live in, and even some of their own subjects, is extremely myopic. It's also highly prejudiced, because these people have sacred cows, you see. They have allegiances, which none of us have, you know. So when people, you know, I do see that when people come into the subject matter, there is a little bit of a learning curve for them, you know, but they should be open-minded and not realize that we're not treating the subject in a normal, referential way, you know, like a street-level way. There is a different kind of approach to this. It is more right brain. It is more connotative. Okay, maybe it lacks some of the rigor of academica, but we make up for that with the scope and the scintillation of what we're looking into, you know. And again, to emphasize the point that I was making before the break, is I don't believe that all the people are ever going to be ready, you see, for this. I do believe it's a small, you know, demographic of aware and enlightened people who are looking for the truth, who are going to come our way. So I don't get bothered and hot and bothered, you see, about the state of the world per se, because I know that this is sacred knowledge. Those who approach it have to approach it sacredly. If you don't approach it sacredly, it's not gonna happen. The magic will not happen. It won't mean anything to you, and it will back you off. We don't need guardians at the door. your own toxicity is your bane, because a person who does not come to this subject matter with a reverent mind, with a holy mind, a religious mind, because, you know, as I said, this is a type of religion, a type of theology. It's an immense self-discovery here. It's intellectually thought-provoking, but it's also spiritually essential. You know, the work that we're dealing with here is essential for the whole of the spiritual, you know, development and maturity of mankind. And astrotheology as a specific subject is the vertebrae. It's the backbone. It's the subject of subjects. It's the vertebrae of all the other subjects once we understand how much has gone into it, not just the symbolism and the temple designs, but the words and the phrases, you see, and the symbolism, you know, that Jordan has been exposing and talking about, the meaning of words, so many of the tropes that we see being used in royalty. Specifically when it comes down to dates, George, when certain civic, political, you see, dating. Why does this politician, you know, go over to this statue on this particular date? You know, mm-hmm. Why is he standing in front of this mausoleum? Why did they initiate this, you know, rule or political change, like, say, the Eurodollar, for instance, you know, or the declaration of war? We're talking about things that are happening before our eyes that are actually dated based on an old stellar zodiac that you and I and the world are not meant to know about. You know, we're meant to know about the little poxy 12 signs of the zodiac and all of that. Or we may be buying products, you see, that have these ancient astrological symbols on them that people just laugh when you say that. They don't understand it. They don't understand there's an entire occult world out there by which very demonic people who don't mean you well. These are people who are there day and night dreaming about how to control you through lack of knowledge, to make your mind so convoluted, you see, by all the pornographic rubbish that they're pouring out through the, you know, media and through the suppression of knowledge and all of these things. They're at war with consciousness, and they're doing a marvelous job. And so we have to become immune to this. And the only way to become immune to it is through knowledge, through awareness of these occult matters, to become aware of what is lying behind the scenes, to empower ourselves with the very same gnosis, the very same knowledge, the very same understandings that these few elites, and they are few, they're not many. We are many, they are few. But they have empowered themselves with occult knowledge, and the time is absolutely ripe now for that to turn around, and we take the light that these people have blinded us with and that they love to hide behind, you know, and turn it back on them and see how they like it when their dirty little secrets, and they're not little secrets, they're big.
They're like big
dirty,
secrets.
Big secrets, yeah, when they're starting to be exposed. I believe that's happening. I don't go out to people to sell my work. They come to me. I see it from the people, you know, interest, their fascination, that even in a beginner level. And I try to keep it like that. I try to keep it on a grassroots level. I try to make it, you know, applicable to what's going on in today's world with lots and lots of, you know, anecdotes of what's going on in our world, because we're living in a bewildering time. And if you're not aware of some of the things that we're talking about, you're not going to understand what's happening around the world. You're not going to happen to understand what's happening in the terms of religion or the whole circus out there, you see. So this is something that makes sense of the world that we're living in. But most importantly, it's spiritually important. For the individual's own spiritual understanding, to understand the roots, the foundations of religion and politics and symbolism and all of these things, it's absolutely crucial.
Jordan, one of my favorite lines with tremendous message is in the movie Network, where Howard Beale, played by Peter Finch, mm-hmm. said, you know, I'm mad as hell, I'm not going to take it anymore. And he came out to say, just give us our television and our toaster and our radio tires and leave us alone, leave us alone. That's what they're trying to do to us.
Yes, and I'll tell you, I've used this example before. If you were a highly trained physician, a doctor in a particular discipline, and you went to a foreign country and to a third world country, say, and you see people are dying from a particular disease that they don't understand, they don't know, but it's killing people, and you as a doctor have studied this disease, and you see all the symptoms, you know exactly what's going on, but you are, nobody's going to listen to you. They have their own people to listen to. That's the same kind of thing that I have been experiencing all my life, is that I have been reading and studying the terms and the words and the symbols that the occult societies, as far back as in the ancient world, the Egyptians and the Phoenician Canaanites, etc., much less the Greeks and the Romans, and then into Eastern Europe, the words, the terms, the symbols that were used by these ancient people are today being used right now in front of us, and most people don't even begin to know what they're hearing. They don't even understand. I mean, I'm just amazed hearing Clinton, Hillary Clinton, the words that she uses, the terms that she uses, Barack Obama's symbol for his candidacy, for his running for president, the symbols that he used. And McCain just blows me away when he uses certain terms that I know where he's getting those terms.
Absolutely.
And once you begin to, once you are very familiar with the terminology that is used by secret orders around the world, the encoded words and terms, and then begin to see politicians and the people who are running for president at this very moment using those terms and words and symbols, it is appalling to me. It's right in front of your face, but you don't see it because you are not trained to see it. And I'm just amazed. I'm watching the entire superstructure of this great republic going under, and people have no idea in the world what is going on. They can't read the symbols. They don't know what the hidden words and symbols mean. And I have said to you before, it's like going into downtown L.A. and you see gangs are scribbling stuff on a wall. It's not scribble. There are symbols and words and terms there. And just because you don't understand it
doesn't mean it doesn't have meaning.
Doesn't mean it doesn't have meaning. And you know as well as I do, when every generation of kids coming up can sit and talk in front of their parents and talk about all kinds of things using the lingo that the kids are using today, and the parents have no idea in the world what their kids are talking about. Not at all. They could be talking about drugs or sex or something, but they're using the terms that the kids know that the parents don't know. Well, that's exactly how our masters who run this planet and who run our country are using terms and words and symbols that they chuckle to themselves that they know what they're talking about, and they know that we don't. We don't even begin to know what these words and terms really mean.
And sometimes they have multiple meanings in which they're like chameleons. They can turn it around, like a Rubik's Cube. So just when you think you got a handle on it, or somebody thinks they got a piece of this, suddenly it's changed again. And there's all these connotative shades and nuances,
I tell you, the people running for president right now in the country, all three of them are using terms that would knock you out. If I would sit down and go through them and show you how the same terms that are used by the three people, by the two people, especially now, but especially Hillary Clinton, the terms that were used by them, the words they're using, I can show you the same words that were used during the French Revolution. I can show you the same identical terms that were used during the Reformation, during the Renaissance. Yeah. I can show you the same terms that were used by the secret societies that were trying to overthrow the American Republic as very founding.
In your opinion, Jordan, what do they want? What's the bottom line?
I don't think it's money, and I don't think it's power, because they already have all the money. They can print it all. So
and they have all the power.
And they have all the power. No, I am totally convinced that the Bible is right when it's saying that there is something else going on here. There is a war not only for the minds of men, but for our very existence. I believe that there is in fact a war going on for the ownership of the human race. And I believe, like gangs, the different gangs of Crips and the Bloods opposing each other, but they're manipulating the people in the city. They're living off of the people in the city. They're selling drugs to the people in the city, and they're manipulating those people. Well, I think that's what's going on here. I think that we have some extraordinarily powerful, wise, and shrewd people who are not interested in money or power. They have both. They are after our very souls. They are after the very life force of the human race. They want to absolutely consume and control the human creature, period.
Are they Luciferians?
Well, Luciferian is a very interesting word, and it's very misunderstood. Lucifer was quite simply, has nothing, all Bible reference works that you can go to any good Bible bookstore and go through all the Bible dictionaries, all the Bible reference works at these seminaries, libraries, which I lived in for years, and you will find that Lucifer was nothing more than the planet Venus. It had nothing to do with the devil at all. As a matter of fact, the very word devil is simply a D put in front of the word evil. It becomes devil, and God is taking an O out of good, and it becomes God is good and devil is evil. It's merely a use of words and terms, tricks. But there is something going on a very high level, and it has nothing to do with what you think it does. They're not looking for political power. They're looking for the very life force, and this is what Hollywood is talking about. Spielberg is, you know, did movies like War of the Worlds, where the subtitle for War of the Worlds is, they're not coming, they're already here. I would suggest that maybe we are being invaded by otherworld intelligences who are actually after our very souls. This is quite simply the story in the Bible. This is quite simply the story in the Hebrew tradition, that there are dark forces in the universe. You know, Christians call them evil, devils, spirits, demons. I don't care what you call them, but the Bible very clearly shows in the Old Testament that they look like us. They look like humans. I mean, Genesis 18 and 19 talks about three men that come walking up into the camp of Abraham, and they sit down and have dinner with Abraham, and then when they leave, it says that that was the Almighty God, the Creator, with two of his accompanying angels. And in Genesis 19, it goes on to say that those other two were the angels that went into Sodom and Gomorrah. They were good-looking, handsome men. I'm saying that I believe hidden and I talked about hidden codes in the Bible years ago. I believe that there is something to this idea that we have been invaded by otherworld entities. I don't know what else I would call them. I don't know what other term would be acceptable. But I don't think that the world that we live in is being run by humans. I think that the people at the top of this world are inhuman. They don't give a damn about human life, about Christianity, about truth, righteousness, nothing. They care only for the consuming of the human family, to own and control the entire human population. And unless and until you begin to wake up and find out how big this thing really is and how frightening it really is, you're never going to suspect how you've been had and been misled by all the words and terms and symbols that are being used. It's an extraordinary story.
It's frightening.
It is absolutely frightening. I have told you in private that I would love to sit down with you, and we've talked about this before, and show you things that I could never talk about in public.
Well, we may get our chance this coming weekend. You're going to be in Santa Maria?
Right, and we're going to be doing a UFO conference together. And you can go on my website to jordanmaxwell.com to events. And all the information is there. Of course, it's on your coast-to-coast event also.
Okay, we'll be back in a moment with Jordan Maxwell. We'll talk astrology with Michael Tesarian. Jordan has an incredible story he once told me. I'm going to have to bend his arm to have him share it with you about a UFO story when he was a young man. We'll be back. Next hour, we'll open up the phone lines, give you an opportunity to chat with Michael Tesarian and Jordan Maxwell. But when we come back, let's have Michael talk about astrology, and I definitely want Jordan to talk about this incredible UFO case when he was younger. We'll be back. Michael, your take on astrology. I have a feeling it's not just looking at stars, planets, and the constellations.
Well, it is, but it's fundamentally looking at consciousness, because in the ancient days, unlike today, nobody was fooled by thinking that some sort of, you know, floating rocks in space was affecting destiny and all of that kind of palaver. Mm-hmm. And nothing could be further from the truth, you know. And that's why my work goes into this thing called the inner zodiac, which basically turns astrology, or a good part of astrology, on its head anyway, but in a positive way. But in the context of astrotheology, what we got to deal with, one of the things that ties it in with you know, what we've been talking about in previous segments is this, you see that we are familiar maybe with the 12 signs of the zodiac, you know, and everyone knows their star sign and so on, but not too many people are familiar with the fact there's another at least 72 constellations in and around the same zodiacal belt. So right near the familiar signs, above them, below them, you see, nearby, side by side, etc., there are these other very important constellations that we no longer know about. People would only know about that if they had studied the ancient, you know, astrographs, or, you know, they had this interest in the archaic aspect of it. But what do we find when we look into the corporate world? What do we look when we find when we look into products? You know, the educated eye starts seeing these symbols, these symbols, because of course, obviously, if these marketers and the secret societies and so on, the people we've been talking about, if they just continually use the same old 12 signs of the zodiac, pretty much even the dumbest person would catch on that there's something going on, right? So they're smarter than that. They're smarter than that. So when you're looking at the Orange Order of Northern Ireland, which is, again, you asked earlier about how did I get introduced to this? Well, my God, in one way, living in Belfast is probably very important part of that, because there is so much architecture there. There are these special events, you know, that are timed to coincide with the summer solstice and what have you, you see.
Sure.
And then all this Masonic symbolism of the ladder and the coffin and the donkey, you know what I mean, and the red hand of Ulster, and also in the harp of David, and just the whole thing is so symbolically rich. And of course, other people come from cultures where they have similar similar sort of rites and rituals and whatnot. But the thing is that, you know, I start to look at this and go, well, you know, what do these mean? There's a freaking skull and crossbones on this symbol over here. Well, what's that all about, you know, or the number 13? I had a curiosity to find out, why are they even using this color? I mean, they call it the Orange Lodge. But, the, you know, then I found out that the orange is connecting to the House of Hanover, you know, the famous Dutch royal families of the past, you know. So I have pattern recognition skills. I started to put all this together. As I said, you know, it was in my own sort of chaotic way until Jordan came along and said, look, chump, let me iron it out for you and show you where this thing really, you know, goes along. But basically, you see, astrology became a fascination because, as I said, it's the root. It's the root and the shoot of the whole thing. You know, you're talking astrotheology, astrology, when you look at the corporate symbols, when you look at, and not all of them, obviously, there's chance in everything, but we're talking about a meticulous, you know, archive, a corpus of knowledge that has been dipped into by so many of these secret societies and so many politicians and all of this kind of thing. In architecture, it's very, very important to realize that France, Cologne, Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, you know, have been meticulously designed to align with certain constellations, to align with certain stars and the rising and the setting of these stars. You know, people like even Richard Hoagland have gone into this. David Ovison has gone into this. You know, in recent times, you have even Graham Hancock, you see, have explored this. He went into the study of the designs of Paris. London, of course, let's not forget London. And even, it's just fascinating. People can get onto my forum. If they go to the Watts New page of the forum, they'll see a presentation I did on the Queen's coronation. This is the coronation of, you know, back of Queen Elizabeth II when she was coronated. And I have a slideshow. It's free. People can look at it and see what I'm talking about the alignments and the geomancy and the sacred geometry that's involved. But it all goes back to astrology and astronomy. This is the key thing, you know, about how many steps she walks, the design of, you know, the podium, the various implements and regalia that is being used, the symbolism, everything right down to the choreography, right, everything right down to the very day in which the coronation was done. You see the zodiacal signs that it was done in. There's so much to this. It's a rich archive. So when people plunge into this area, they're going to have a lot of answers about the things that are going on in the world. Why it's empowering, of course, which I said earlier on, is because, you see, once you've dived into this and you get a handle on it, you start to understand two fascinating things. You understand that it is powerful. It has to do with consciousness. It has to do with an awareness of the macrocosmic mysteries that are all around you, including the mystery of God, you see. And you realize then why these elites, whether they, you want to call them Illuminati or Luciferian or whatever, you know, the terms in that instance, you know, you can pick your term. But you understand why these power brokers want to use this information and want to use this occult knowledge because it is powerful. And the second thing you learn is basically how it can start to empower you in your own life, in your own business, you see, in your own educational pursuits, in your own awareness more than anything else. Because if you change man mentally, if you change him intellectually, if you change him rationally, you know, everything else in his life changes. His relationships change, his understanding of politics, the world, you know, of how to treat other human beings, how to understand his own mysteries of his own selfhood, you see, how to come into a closer rapport with the creative force, you see. All of this matriculates. All of this goes up several notches. It upgrades the person's entire awareness because it is literally turning them on. I mean, there was an anecdote. Jordan talking earlier just reminded me of this fantastic anecdote in the work of Conan Doyle, you know, in one of the Sherlock Holmes stories. Very early on in the story, when Watson, Dr. Watson and Sherlock Holmes had just met, and Dr. Watson was very much in awe of this great genius whose observational skills, you know, were like incredibly honed.
Right, right.
And he was trying to learn. He was trying to say, teach me this. You know, what's the difference, man, between seeing and observation? You keep talking about the difference of just seeing and true observation. And he said simply, well, you come to Baker Street, you come to visit me, Watson, you know, in the fiction, the character said this. And he said, you run up the stairs. How many times have you run up the stairs to come into my room, you know, to see me? He goes, maybe hundreds of times. He goes, how many stairs are there? Of course, big silence.
Yeah.
You know, the character Watson was unable to say, well, I don't know. What does it bloody matter anyway? You know, how many stairs there are? He goes, well, that's what I mean about people who see and people who observe. That's what the Bible means when it says, having eyes you see not, having ears you hear not. All we're trying to do is turn people on to the art of seeing, not the mechanics of seeing. You know, the eye is going to do its thing because there it is. It's created by something higher than you. A higher intelligence created your body. And it has a mechanical autonomous system, you see, that will always perform. But there's also the art of life. There's the art of seeing, the art of hearing, the art of observation, you see, and deduction. We're not saying we're right. We're saying you find out whether we're right. You go and do the research, do the homework, you know, and pick up with this and take it on maybe into areas we have never even conceived of, you know, because this is what is happening. The people that, you know, I connect with by internet and through the forum and people who've, you know, talked to me, that's exactly what they are doing. You wouldn't believe the research of people who've picked up, you know, and so many people that my work has inspired, just like Jordan inspired me. And there's a network. I mean, people who check out Google, YouTube, you know, Generation, they see this. There's so many great uploads now. There's so many great videos on symbolism. And people are taking in the areas, you know, that I never, ever considered. And that's fantastic to me, you know. I love that. I love the fact that this is branching out, you know, and we have colleagues going around their own cities, going around their own towns, taking measurements, looking at the designs of buildings, finding out, going and interviewing leading Freemasons, you know, finding out, inquiring, not through fear, not through trepidation, but through curiosity, you know, because curiosity and the drive for knowledge is a very, very powerful instinct within people. And that's what, remember you asked earlier, why are they doing this? Why would they be doing this to us, this terrible insinuation of the poison? It's so that we slowly fall asleep, gradually, slowly, you know, the mind gets dull. People get caught up in the domestic minutiae. They get completely, you know, sort of bamboozled. They stop thinking. They don't even like to pause between thought. That thinking is something that almost takes too much time. You know, we're in this soundbite
sure.
generation. You see, so it's a drip feed, drip feed, drip feed of constantly trying to lower the person into their lower drives, into the confusion, into the miasma, so that they are not able to see the truth, you know, which is all around them. This is the thing. So we have to counterbalance that by continually applying, you know, the antidote and continually trying to make people immune to this spiritual poison, this psychic tyranny that is absolutely ubiquitous in our world. And it's there, and you have to understand it, like Jordan said, like a doctor, like a scientist. You come to the village, you see that it's there, and then you must deal with it rationally. You can't run around, you know, with your hair on fire. You've got to go step by step and try to save as many people as you can individually, you know, and then when you've turned those people well, hopefully they will go on and vaccinate, you know, or heal the other people. So it's a growing group. We're in the early, early stages of this. It's not something that's, you know, developed. It's very new. I mean, look at Jordan Maxwell. You're talking about his own life story. How many other Jordan Maxwells are there in America? Very bloody few as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, me too.
You're dealing with a very short period of time. He spawned a lot of interest in people like myself. Then it moves on to the next sphere and the next sphere, and we move on. And we try to present these works and these DVDs and videos so that people get a crash course, because we obviously understand you know, people don't have the time, George, for the 30, 40 years of research that Jordan's done, you know, maybe the 25 years of research I've done. They don't have that time, and that's fine, by all means. It's our job. It's, you know, the responsibility is on us to create the products and the books and the teachings that go out, and people can have this then, you know, in a compendium form in which they, you know, it saves them all of that time so we can get with the gig of what's really going on in our world, you know.
Jordan, I want you to share with us that incredible story you told me at lunch many months ago when you were a young man about the, well, I can't say what he was because that is part of the story, but with the girlfriend of yours.
Oh, well, let me say a couple of things first.
All right.
One, and I'll get back to that. I have so many people that go to my website but don't seem to be able to scroll down to see what's on my website. So I'm just saying to everybody, when you go to my website, which is jordanmaxwell.com, scroll down and go through all of the various boxes of research and all the various areas on my website that are filled with stuff that most people don't even know is there. I mean, I've talked to so many people that they say they've been on my website. They didn't see this. They didn't see that. They didn't look at this. So I'm just saying there's a lot of material on my website that a lot of people don't know. So if you go on my website, go through all of it. And there's three books in particular which are dealing with what we're talking about tonight right on the homepage you might want to get. So there's a lot of stuff on my website. Scroll down and see it all. Now, second, in relation to that experience, I'm kind of hesitant to talk about it because my enemies and my detractors will use it to cram down my throat and claim that I'm you know, mentally disordered or something because of my experience. But and they've done that because I've talked about this one experience actually on another radio program once, and God, I mean, I was amazed the way that the people picked up on that and began to say that I was demonic, I was working for the devil, and
gee,
all kinds
no,
of
not
strange
you.
Stuff.
That I can testify to,
yeah.
Not you.
Yeah. But do we have a few moments?
Yeah, we've got 6 minutes or so.
Okay, well, back in 1959, I was 19 years old. I came to California, and I was in a restaurant in North Hollywood, just a 19-year-old kid bumping around the country and ended up in North Hollywood. And I'm sitting at the counter in a restaurant in North Hollywood and sitting next to a young girl that was about a couple of years younger than I, maybe 17. And so we got to talking and found out we both lived in the basic same area, about 3 or 4 blocks from town. I had walked down to town, and she had also. So we started meeting in town on the weekends, and we started hanging out together. And so when we would walk home, I lived about 3 blocks from town. She lived 5. So she lived a couple blocks further than I did, so I never really knew exactly where she lived, but she knew where I lived. And so one night she came over to my place and she said, Jordan, my dad wants to talk to you. And I said, I'm not interested to talk to your dad. I got nothing to say to him. And she said, no, he's a very interesting and important man, and he's got something to talk to you about. So I thought, that's interesting. So I said, okay. So I went with her. The moment I was walking up to her house, her father happened by chance to be coming out of the house. And the moment I saw him, my spirit felt a presence that I have never felt before, and it was a euphoric, strange feeling that I was in the presence of something very, very powerful. But I loved the feeling that I got from seeing him, but I didn't realize what I was doing. I mean, I didn't understand the feeling, but it was very powerful. And he said, come on in. He pointed for us to come in. And so my girlfriend and I went in the house, and her younger sister, Mary, was sitting on the floor by the fireplace, and my girlfriend sat on the other side of the fireplace, and the mother was in the kitchen. And the father and I sat on the sofa. On one side he sat, and I was on the other side. And he was just talking, making small talk, and asking me how I like California and how's the job going, mm-hmm. and this and that. And so I was feeling a little bit more safer, and because I was still feeling this strange feeling about him. But it wasn't fearful. It was just an incredible spiritual high being in this man's presence. So we're just sitting there chatting and talking, and then he says to me, he says, remember when you were 8 years old back in Florida and you were your dad had built a new back porch on your home because your house, the back porch was falling apart, and so he built the new back porch. And he said, remember how he used green lumber and it smelled kind of funny? And one night you were in bed and you were supposed to be in sleeping, but you got up and you were about 8 years old and you got up and you went out the back porch, remember? And he said, and you sat there picking the green lumber because it smelled funny. And you were picking it with your fingers and the moon was out. And you talked to God that night, remember?
Jesus.
And I was frightened. I didn't want to show tears in front of my girlfriend, but he frightened me. And he said, and he looked at me very sternly, but not challengingly, but very sternly. And he said, well, did that happen or didn't it? And I said, well, yes, it did happen. And he said, well, how did I know that? And I said, I don't know how you know that. And he said, well, I know that because we were there. We saw you. And after all, you did ask God to do something important with your life. So we have brought you to California. And I said, what do you mean you brought me to California? And he said, why are you here? For what purpose did you come to California? And I said, I have no idea. I'm just here. I don't know why I'm here. He said, that's right. We have brought you here. He said, we have something for you to do later on in the toward the end of your life, but we have to train you. We are going to train you to do something for the human family, but it's going to take a long time for you to grow in wisdom and knowledge, but there will come a day when you will know what you have to do. And I was absolutely blown away by this man, and he began to tell me what I was going to do. He knew all about my life as a child. That was just an extraordinary experiment.
And he simply vanished.
And then one day, maybe a couple of months later, because I went out with him and his family, his wife and family, two or three times. We had a great time, and he would sit and talk with us, even with his wife and girls. But he would talk with us about the gods in the spirit world and the ancient ones and all the ancient things that were going on in the world. And then one day I went over in the morning. One morning I went over to visit, and they were gone. The house was wide open.
Empty.
Everything was gone, and I never heard from them ever again, ever. They were gone.
That is one strange story, John.
I'll tell you. It was, but it really changed my life because this man knew all about my life as a child and the things he told me that I would be doing later on in life. I now find myself doing exactly what he said I would be doing. I have some other great experiences I'd like to tell you about one day soon.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to continue in just a moment. We're going to take phone calls next hour for both of you. Michael Tesserian, where's your next conference, my friend?
I've been so preoccupied. We have a DVD movie coming out in a couple of weeks. You know, maybe even within about 10 or 15 days, we're putting the final touches to my first documentary movie that I've been doing with Henrik Palmgren of Red Ice Creations.
Good for you.
Yes, and it's actually the first of three. So, you know, haven't been able to do too many live events because we've been, you know, hammering together a lot of these products and some great new information.
You never stop, Michael.
Well, look at what's going on in our world. Monumental things are happening. We got to stay on top of it. We got questions about 2012 and the future of mankind. This DVD, by the way, is called The Architects of Control. It's going to be a series in the Architects of Control series. There's going to be about three. First one's coming out, as I said, real soon, so people can go to the Michael Tesserian website, or they can just go straight to architectsofcontrol.com. We got a preview up there so people can see what we've been doing there, you know.
Yeah. Let's take phone calls when we come right back.